It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? Dictionary.com provided 10 new dating terms to know about in 2021. What is woke fishing? Well, you'll just have to stay tuned to find out. At 1:30, it was a wild weekend in college football. We'll get into some of those games. In a mere minutes, it is our weekly chat with the great Joe Cook of IT on 3 and the 1-0 podcast. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. I hope you're having a good Monday. Again, the reminder, it is Cyber Monday. We got some deals for you at hornfm.com and flexatx.com. There's a new black horn hat you may want to check out. 25% off horn hats with the promo code HORN25. No space there. HORN25. Also 25% off all Flex ATX merchandise with the promo code FLEX25. FLX25. So check it out. Cyber Monday on the Horn and Flex ATX. Obviously, been hitting the big stories of the day. Lincoln Riley to USC, one of the biggest stories in college football, and that certainly affects Longhorn fans. We've been getting your reaction throughout the morning and into the afternoon now. Specs text line is there for you, 337-3776. We'll read some more of those texts coming up a little bit later. Right now, though, as Trey mentioned, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline and bring in Joe Cook. We talk to him every Monday. No press conference today, so we'll move it to 1 o'clock today and InsideTexas.com, On3.com, and if you're on Twitter, he is at JosephCook89. Joe, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Always good to have you. Good Thanksgiving. Did we get enough food eaten? Too much food eaten? How'd it go?
Probably too much. Fired up the Traeger back home in Houston after the game on Friday and made the most of that. So I'm the belt loop is tightening a little bit.
There you go, trying to recover. So we'll get to the Texas game itself. Give me your reaction to the Lincoln Riley news. I was sitting watching NFL games yesterday, and it absolutely stopped my world. It was just like, wait, what? Lincoln Riley's going to USC? What'd you make of it?
Over the past week, there seemed to be just kind of a growing sense that he was going to be on the move. We had heard it on 3 Inside Texas, more and more whispers about LSU, but nothing really ever good enough to run, of course. And, you know, there doesn't seem to be that typical NFL opening that he's always linked to year after year. So it kind of seemed like LSU or nothing. Then you get to Friday, and he loses Bedlam, and he gets asked by Kerry Murdoch, and he said, I'm not going to LSU. And that kind of made everybody think, oh, okay, well, it's sealed. Well, there's Mike Bone and USC making a massive move. So it somewhat is the decision I saw as a possibility, but definitely not the destination. I had no clue that was going to be coming. And then once I think it was John Wilner and Bruce Feldman started hinting at it, then Dame will put it out there. Then on 3's Matt Zenitz was confirmed it was happening. That was quite a day to be a college football fan on the internet, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe, recruits are jumping ship from Norman like rats from a sinking ship. Are there any recruits that the Longhorns are in on now that they may be able to capitalize on guys no longer wanting to play for the Sooners?
Yeah, there's actually a few from Texas that that the Longhorns would be in on that Oklahoma beat them out on. We go into deeper detail on the Inside Scoop on Inside Texas. But there are a lot of guys like Jacob Llewellyn, Kobe McKenzie, Kip Lewis. Those are some crossover targets that Oklahoma beat Texas for. Obviously, Oklahoma, they don't have a clue what's going to happen in these next couple days until they get a coach. And do they get Luke Fickell, who I guess if you're Joe Castiglione, you're rooting really, really hard for Dana Holgorsen to end Fickell's season or make it more palatable for him to be able to leave. Basically, they've got, 16 days? So they've got to make a good hire in 16 days and then also have those coaches go and talk to the commits that are, planned to play for Riley and Grinch. Well, Riley and Grinch aren't going to be there. Have to make coordinator hires, sell a system. Oklahoma's in a really, this is a pinch. And blue bloods like this don't often get in pinches. and especially not Oklahoma since they hired Bob Stoops. So Texas has a window into some of these recruitments. I think a lot of those California guys that Oklahoma had committed are going to probably stick with Lincoln Riley in some capacity and make their way to USC. But there's definitely a window of opportunity for Texas, and the inside scoop on Inside Texas goes into that in pretty good detail.
Joe, in terms of where they go now, it's like, I'll give them the respect that it could go either way here. It's a big enough job where you could say it's got to be big name, it's different than other places and all those things that make other fan bases jealous. But they just went two in a row where they didn't do that. They went with Bob Stoops in his first head coaching job, and it worked big time. And then he decided, no, this OC, I think this will be fine. And then it worked again. So in your mind, do they have to go with more of a big name route, or do you think they could actually go three in a row here where they go with the, you know, down the coordinator route and it work again?
I think that they have to go big name. I really do. I don't know what big name is there. Who's going to, you know, if any NFL guy is going to leave in week 12, that doesn't make sense. This is just not a good year to be in a coaching market, especially if you're a blue blood competing against, you know, USC and LSU. I guess you didn't know you were competing against USC after a fashion, but here you are in Florida. It's and now with the early signing period, it's just really tough for there. I don't know where they go. I mean, maybe Bob is that big name since he's going to be the interim coach. But there's a reason also that they moved on from Bob. I'm sure he wanted to leave the program in good hands, but they don't make that move unless they see it as a sort of upgrade. So if they were upgrading over 2016 Bob Stoops, what's 2021 Bob Stoops going to look like? I have no clue where they go. Like you mentioned, this is a program that's very good at making hires, but they've only had to make two in the past 20 years. I listened to a couple Sooners podcasts last night just to kind of have a little fun, and one of them was from their rival site, and they said they've never covered a head coaching search. That's wild. So that it's one of those things where they are just in a pinch right now that they've never really been in. And while you would like to trust that hiring, I guess, brain trust, this is a pinch and a situation and, you know, problems that they've never really had to take head on. So to think that they're going to nail it again, it's hard for me to go there.
Yeah. Perhaps the big difference between 2016 Bob Stoops and 2021 Bob Stoops is that 2021 Bob Stoops isn't having to make a Sophie's choice between the program and his cage gorilla of a brother Mike. They just won't allow him to bring Mike on the staff anymore. Perhaps that'll make the difference for Bob this time around, Joe.
You think? Well, and then the other thing is, do they go outside the family, or do they actually stay inside the family and go get Mark Stoops?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a move that's as palatable for Sooner administrators, but I mean, I've looked at some of like the Sooner sites, and I'm just trying to think about it. And, you know, there's just no clear, like, oh yeah, go get him. Like, there you go. And I think that's kind of why Bob Stoops is the interim, especially when you're seeing all the staffers. I would have understood. I don't think it would have been a smart move, but I would have understood if they would have just maybe promoted Grinch. I think it would have been a bigger risk than Riley for sure, but that's not even an option. You know, do you go get a Gary Patterson who just got run out of town at TCU? That's not going to move the needle, I don't think. I don't know where they turn either in the college or NFL ranks for a proven name that job kind of deserves.
Yeah, the name that makes the most sense for me right now is Luke Fickell. Josh Heupel might make sense. I think there would probably need some talking to that would have to take place, but that's part of the fascinating part of this whole process is seeing which direction they do turn long term. All right, Joe, the Texas-Kansas State game feels like it was about a month ago with all the craziness that has ensued since then. Having said all of that, you were at DKR, you covered the game, you talk to the players and coaches afterwards. What stands out to you about the Longhorns' win, which snapped a six-game losing streak to end the season?
Getting rid of that losing streak is always going to be big. Now you're you go into the offseason with a win, and you don't go into the offseason with a, you know, looming seven-game losing streak over the program. You know, a six-game losing streak in the season, still not good, don't get me wrong, but you go off on a little bit nicer note, and that, there's always be something said for that. As far as the game, I mean, what else can you say about Rashawn Johnson? With a quarterback, one quarterback injured, another quarterback extremely limited in his ability to throw the football, they basically had to say, we got to trust our offensive line to go forward, and we got to trust our, you know, one really, you know, ready to go running back who was still dinged up, and he battled through it all. He was easily the I hate using this term, but sometimes it applies. He was the player that wanted it most on Friday, and that played out luckily very well for Texas. I think you also have to, you know, give some of the credit to the defense as well. The Kansas State quarterback is extremely limited as a passer. You might even take Tyrone Swoops over him if you're trying to work a passing offense. And he got loose once, and he got loose as a result of some bad effort, and Sarkisian made, you know, the right moves to get rid of that bad effort, those bad effort players. Outside of that, Texas basically did what it needed to do. Pitched a shutout in the second half. Deuce Vaughn got his yardage, but he didn't get, you know, aside from that one, I think, touchdown run, didn't get any, like, real big explosive plays. And the Longhorn defense bowed up at times, and often we don't see them bow up. So, and it's also Kansas State, you know, bowl eligible team, but what, now they're sitting at, they're just above 500, or they're at 6-6?
Yeah, so, 7-5.
Yeah, 7-5. So it's not like they beat some world beaters there, but still, that's a good win over a team that, though flawed, had won some tough games. I think it's looks a lot different if quarterbacks were healthy. I think it becomes a high scoring affair, and we've seen Texas get involved in those. But since Casey Thompson and Skylar Thompson were both out, and we got the game we got, and luckily Texas had Rashawn Johnson compared to Kansas State.
Talking about Joe Cook, InsideTexas.com, On3.com. Joe, talk a little bit about Cade Brewer's performance. The one carry certainly was impactful. He had four catches, including that touchdown catch, which was nice. Throw in a little Jared Wiley. The tight ends ended up being a big part of what they were able to do on Friday as well.
Yeah, I know Surly Horns was going crazy over that with their position group. that Cade Brewer touchdown, that A, just a great catch. And, you know, although Thompson was limited, one of his better throws. But that was set up by a play run earlier in the game. I think it was on the Texas first possession, either the first or second play. They ran Brewer into motion towards a two-receiver set. And they threw a screen to Xavier Worthy, and they got Brewer moving towards a blocker. It didn't go anywhere, but they showed that. And then they showed it again in the red zone, and if you watch that play, you'll see that corner bite and think, oh, okay, screen to Worthy once again. Well, there went Brewer. Thompson fit the ball between the corner and the safety. It wasn't the best thrown ball, but luckily Brewer was able to make one of the best catches of his career and bring that touchdown in. So that was a nice day for the tight ends. I guess considering where they are on the closer to the line of scrimmage, being closer to Casey Thompson, they were going to be a little bit of an option. You saw Jared Wiley with that tight end screen make a little progress. So they utilized them well, maybe out of necessity, and they stepped up to the plate when they needed to.
You and I were on the same page with Tope Amade on Friday. I said something in the local post game about the effort that he was displaying that was very evident from watching in the stands, and you wrote an article that released around the same time or maybe a little bit after that. What do you think of Tope Amade's final game as a Texas player?
Man, that is an impressive young man. For all the things that he's gone through, not just in the football locker room, but in life with the passing of his mother, you know, that is someone who shows just what it means to, you know, stick with something, even if it doesn't always seem like it's going to be perfect for you. If you stick with it, you can make the best out of it with your own actions. And that's exactly what Tope did. And unfortunately for Kansas State defensive linemen, they had to feel that effect on Friday. Easily probably one of his best games as a Longhorn, you know, hadn't had a ton of action. This was his first extended action this year. and he made the most of it. And that's someone who, you know, I'm very glad that he got this, and I think he mentioned this last week. You know, college football can kind of use the players. There's no, you know, softer way to put it. But players can use college football. And Tope Amade has used college football to not only get an undergraduate degree from McCombs, but two different master's degrees. So that is someone who, even if he didn't play, even if he's not going to go to the NFL, that's someone who used college football. And to also see him be rewarded at the very end of his career by college football with a win, the way he did it with him leading the way, that's why I made that appreciation post. It's why you said what you said. He's the type of thing that, you know, you look, he's the type of person and player that, you know, when you look around college football and it's become 90% of business, but 10% of it is about educating kids and giving them the opportunity to play the sport they love. And it's nice, you know, it's great that Tope utilized that and made such a great story out of this season for himself.
Joe, before we let you go, let's get your thoughts on the Big 12 championship game. Do you like Oklahoma State or Baylor? And if you like the Cowboys, do you think they get in the playoff with a win?
I think you got to go with the Cowboys. A lot of it depends on Gary Bohannon's health. If they're marching out a freshman quarterback against that defense, I don't think there's much of a chance for Baylor. And that's kind of what that not exactly what that game looked like earlier in the year. With, you know, Abram Smith, I think, got one big play. But other than that, the Bears were held pretty to not a whole lot. So I see Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy taking this one. As far as the playoff, you know, it's crazy how much of this hinges on the SEC title game. I'd like to think that they're assuredly in no matter what. But with Notre Dame and Cincinnati kind of looming as, you know, outsiders, that makes it a little bit tougher to say. Now, I think Notre Dame is going to get left out, and I think also with good reason. But, you know, let's say Alabama somehow beats Georgia, which I don't see happening. Let's say Michigan wins the Big Ten. Let's say Cincinnati beats Houston. They're not going to knock out Georgia the top four. Alabama's going to be in. Michigan's going to be in. And I don't – an undefeated Cincinnati has a good claim. So I think what they – Oklahoma State obviously has to take care of business. I think that should be enough. But I think they would much prefer to see Georgia take care of the Crimson Tide so they don't have to sweat it as much.
Yeah, there's a lot of people rooting for Georgia. Lots of different fan bases rooting for Georgia this weekend just to handle the business, clear the deck, and get Alabama out of there. That's Joe Cook. Check out InsideTexas.com, On3.com. He mentioned it there, the inside scoop with the very latest on the recruiting stuff coming out of this Lincoln Riley story that could benefit Texas. Joe, we appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Awesome, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.
And remember, if you're on Twitter, at JosephCook89 is where he is. All right, coming up, wild weekend at college football, the shakeout from that kind of Iron Bowl and that the game in the snow and all the rest, plus the coaching carousel. Lincoln Riley's going to have a new job, so what does that mean at Oklahoma? Plus Florida found their guy, and SMU and TCU apparently have their guy, too. We'll tell you about it on The Horn.
Shirts and skins.
When you try your best, but you don't succeed. When you get what you want, but not what you need. When you feel so tired, but you can't sleep. Stuck in reverse.
New music on a Monday, coming off your Thanksgiving weekend. What do you got, Trey?
Casey Musgraves, Fix You.
New Casey Musgraves. I know her last effort got all kinds of attention.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see about this one. Also, we had some Wolf Mother and also Fantastic Negrito with new stuff today. New stuff on Friday, rather. We're bringing it to you today. More new music coming up. A lot of stuff going on football-wise. Yes, we've talked about Lincoln Riley. to USC. We'll get into some of the other coaching carousel moves, but what a wild weekend of college football we had. We knew we had two elimination games, essentially, Trey, in the Michigan-Ohio State game and Bedlam. The loser would have two losses and be out, and in the end, it was, I guess with all due respect to Michigan, the two bigger dogs that got ultimately kicked out. Certainly right now, the two bigger dogs, Ohio State and Oklahoma, get sent packing, and it's Oklahoma State and Michigan that got big, big wins.
And Michigan just kicked Ohio State's ass. That was impressive because Ohio State had been playing so well going into that game, including on offense, and they were just never able to get into a rhythm offensively because Michigan controlled the clock by being so good running the football and usually having a response to Ohio State's attempts to claw their way back into the game with touchdowns and things like that.
Yeah, the interesting note as I'm looking at that box score after the game, it didn't feel like it watching it, but Ohio State actually had the ball longer than Michigan did by a couple minutes. It was one of those things where Michigan had 297 on the ground, but it wasn't like they kept the ball for 35, 38, 40 minutes. In a way, it was more impressive the way they did it. Ohio State was still had that offense out there, but Michigan was shutting them down when they needed to. But I was honestly most impressed with the fact that Harbaugh now, we've talked about what Gundy has done. We'll get to him in a second, what he's had to change in his mind. Harbaugh has had to admit that football has evolved a little bit past where he wanted it to be. And he's taking those shots and taking the shots with McNamara, the big pass plays, the one down to the 2-yard line where the guy slides practically into the end zone. Those were the kind of plays he wasn't taking. Those are the kind of shots he wasn't taking a couple years ago. So the fact that they're expanding just a little bit of the thought process and they're being physical, because he knows they want to be physical. Now he's kind of got all of it together. That's an impressive group, and thank you to Mother Nature, who decided it needed to snow that day. That was so perfect.
Yeah, that definitely helped. As far as the Oklahoma-Oklahoma State game goes, we all felt like Oklahoma State should win that game by a touchdown, maybe a little bit more than that, just based on how good their defense is, them being good enough running the football to really control that side of things as well. But we shouldn't be at all surprised that Oklahoma kept it close enough to have a chance to win at the end. And unfortunately for them, it was a special teams miscue that cost them an opportunity to pull off the upset.
They each had one. I thought Oklahoma State was going to give the game away.
Yeah, it felt like it for a second.
It's like when they went up, what, the last, there were two mistakes, and then the last one made it 9 points, 33-24. Even in Stillwater, I thought, oh my God, that might be it. I don't know if they can get out of this. There was plenty of time left. But I thought that might hurt them a little too much. They kept fighting. They kept coming back. Spencer Sanders had had a really good night. And Oklahoma State's going to be a tough that's going to be a hell of a ball game at Jerry World. You want to talk about a physical, nasty, blocking and tackling kind of game. Oklahoma State-Baylor Part 2 is going to be fun. The first one was, what, a 10-point win for Oklahoma State, I think. Sanders threw three picks, but the defense gave up nothing off of the three picks.
Right.
It was just a nasty blue-collar kind of game. I think that's what we're going to see on Saturday.
I'm leaning with what Joe Cook said last segment when asked about the Big 12 championship game. If Baylor is rolling that young kid out there who had his moments on Saturday versus Texas Tech, don't get me wrong, like good moments, and then he also had some bad moments too, Oklahoma State is going to win that game going away.
They sure win it, yeah.
Gary Bohannon will help Baylor stick in that game. I still think Oklahoma State probably has a little bit too much for Baylor in that situation, too.
So just quick, easy math here. If based on the fact that Bama and Auburn were so close, Bama can't get in if they lose close. They're not getting in as a two loss. So if Georgia beats Bama, isn't that all Oklahoma State needs?
I think so.
Because Notre Dame's not jumping them by playing nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, because Alabama did lose that or did win that game so closely, a game that they very easily could have lost. Obviously, they're having to tie it up with tens of seconds left to put it into overtime, and then they take care of business in overtime. I think losing to Georgia, even by a point or two, that should be enough to kick them out, assuming that there is that one lost team still left, whether it's Michigan, Oklahoma State, even Cincinnati. All those teams would get in over Alabama at this point, and I think Notre Dame would too. I think.
Now, Notre Dame's going to need some. I think Notre Dame needs Oklahoma State or Cincinnati to lose.
But I'm just saying, even if those teams lose, I think Notre Dame would still get in over a two-loss Alabama team.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I think that'd be – because Notre Dame has kind of done what Cincinnati's done these last few weeks, win and win impressively.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame is stepping on people. I know their schedule is weaker than it used to be because the teams they're playing aren't great. Stanford's not a badass this year, but they just beat them 45-14.
Right.
And then the week before, what was it, 55-0 or whatever it was? Like, they're putting on the show they need to.
And their one loss would be more acceptable than Bama's two losses. While Georgia wouldn't be that bad necessarily, that A&M loss looks really bad for them right now.
Right, you're exactly right. That's very different. Yeah, losing to the Aggies when they lost to them is one thing. And even that night, A&M had lost two.
Oh, at that point, nobody was giving A&M a chance to win that game. That's just, you know, A&M played well that night, don't get me wrong, but that's also how Alabama was that night, too.
Yeah, you're right. No, they were not quite ready that night either. So, a crazy weekend around college football. You mentioned A&M. Ed Orgeron got the win in his last game. Crazy wild finish there. A&M finishes 8-4. You want to talk about a strange season? That is a weird season they just put together.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the wins and think of the losses for that team. They've got a win against Bama, a win against Auburn, and then six others I am not going to list right now. Go look it up yourself. None of them are impressive. None of them. And then they have the four losses against the Mississippi schools, Arkansas, and LSU with Ed Orgeron. I mean, and that was if you watch the game, that's not a dynamic, incredible LSU team.
What did you think of that loss on Saturday night?
It was a rough one. Well, it felt like a game they didn't have a shot in. Then they fought their way back, and then I'm thinking they're going to escape it at 24-20, I guess was the score at that point. And then to give it up at the end, it was rough. And a lot of Aggies really upset, a lot of Aggies with high expectations that are not happy with 8-4. I thought they were a 10-2 team this year. I thought that was a loss, and I thought Bama was a loss, and I thought the Aggies would handle everything else. They did not.
Yeah, and in retrospect, LSU should have been a win, considering how bad they were this year. Ed Orgeron's on his way out. I guess he gets an inspired effort out of his guys one final time. The fact that game is in Baton Rouge does matter a little bit as well. I expected that A&M defense to hold there at the end, though, and unfortunately they did not.
They didn't hold up. They'll give up some plays from time to time. And the other thing that was weird to me in that game was that Jimbo Fisher trusted Zach Calzada's arm that much and just ignored his running game. He walked in there assuming LSU wouldn't let him run, so don't run. It was just like all these teams in the NFL that play the Bucs. Like the Colts fans yesterday watching that game going, oh, wait a second, we're really good at running the ball, so we're just walking in scared?
And then all of a sudden they did run the football in the fourth quarter and they found success doing so.
Yeah, it's amazing how that happens, right?
Yeah.
So that was and that's what I kept hearing from the Cowboys game. Remember the first game of the year with the Cowboys and Bucks? Well, the Cowboys knew they couldn't run. What do you mean they knew they couldn't run? They have a pretty good offensive line in Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard, and they just give up? But that was the attitude. I went back in rewatching A&M and LSU. It's like, wow, you walked in there with a spread mindset. We're going to run side to side because we're just not going right at them. But going right at them is how you beat Bama. But you didn't want to try it in Baton Rouge. That was weird.
Yeah, I mean, you at least try to go strength on strength. Even if another team is good at what it is that you're supposedly good at, they're good at stopping it, you still give it a try, especially because you know that that's, you know, a big reason why you've been successful like you have up to this point is because the rushing attack was so good.
So interesting, as we bring it back around to the coaching tray, I'm rewatching that game. They were mentioning Lincoln Riley in maybe to LSU as a possible big hire they could make. They referenced the Jimbo thing. They replayed the Jimbo comments during the game. And then, of course, we come around to yesterday, and you got Lincoln Riley to USC. Billy Napier, the guy that was at Louisiana, he's now going to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people had thought LSU might look at him as a lesser name, if you will. But Scott Woodward is still saying it's going to be a home run hire. He's promising his LSU people that it's going to be a home run hire. And the thought, Trey, is that he went out of his way over the weekend to just try and try and try to convince Jimbo Fisher. But if I'm an LSU fan, what I'm wondering now is, well, what if he ultimately says no and stays in College Station? What do you do then, and who have you missed out on by that point?
By the way, what has Jimbo done this year that is leading you to want to put all your eggs in that basket? I realize he and Scott have a personal relationship, but hopefully there's somebody in Woodward's ear saying, dude, look, Jimbo's a good coach, don't get me wrong, but there's other really good coaches out there, and if we drag our feet too long on this, considering some of the other openings right now, specifically Oklahoma, we could lose out on the best candidate because we're too enamored with the guy that we just shouldn't be.
Yeah, the other thing is if you saw it, the narrative coming out of A&M's loss to LSU was the comparisons between Jimbo through 4 years and Kevin Sumlin through 4 years. The numbers are pretty close.
Yeah, I did see that exact same record.
In some cases, the numbers are exactly the same. So there's a lot of people that are kind of taking their dig at the Aggies, taking their stab to the ribs to the Aggies to go, oh, really? This is the guy? All the guaranteed money, all that you were so sure this was him, right? Well, 4 years in, he's looking about like Sumlin did.
Look, disappointing year this season, but this was also a transitionary year for you guys. The defense was good. You had great running backs, but you were reloading on offensive line, and you were having to reload at quarterback, too, and replacing a four-year starter. So you still could have finished up 9-3 or 10-2, don't get me wrong, but 8-4 is also understandable considering some of what you're having to replace heading into the season.
Elsewhere on the coaching side of it, it is now done. Sonny Dykes is going to go across the skillet from SMU to TCU. And, Trey, apparently SMU's got their guy now, Rhett Lashley. Everybody remember that name? Rhett was at SMU with Sonny Dykes a few years ago as the OC.
Those 2 years that Shane Buechele really tore up the AAC.
Correct. And that got him the gig with Manny Diaz at Miami. That's where he was. Now he's going to go back to SMU as the head coach. So Rhett Lashley, way back in the day, I say way back, a few years before that, he was at Auburn with Gus Malzahn.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody remembers that era, kind of 2013 to 2016, I think was the time when he was at Auburn. So right, just a few years right after Cam Newton. Cam was 2010, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been just a few years after that. Maybe into the, what was my man's name? Maybe Stidham?
Would that have been Jarrett Stidham?
Stidham,
yeah,
years?
That makes sense.
Maybe the early part of Jarrett Stidham. He was at Auburn, and now he's going to be SMU's head coach. So it looks like both sides of the skillet matchup have now found their guy.
Man, speaking of Cam Newton, boy, I like Matt Rhule as a head coach. Bringing Cam Newton back to serve as your starting quarterback is a fireable offense.
Cam Newton!
He did it at 5-5. They've lost two games. Did you see the QBR and rating yesterday?
No.
Trey, his QBR was 5.4, and his passer rating was 5.8.
It probably would have been a zero had he not gotten lucky with that one long pass to DJ Moore at the beginning of the game.
That was kind of impressive. I was like, whoa, that was kind of a real NFL throw when you needed one.
Yeah.
Boy, he doesn't have many of those right now, though.
So there was a point in the game, Chad, and I watch this so much more closely now because I know that you and I have no problem being very honest about Cam Newton, where he reared back. And he threw the ball as hard and as far as he possibly could to try and hit a receiver 35 yards downfield. Now, the ball went 40 yards downfield, to Cam Newton's credit, again, throwing as hard as humanly possible
right,
for him.
Right, he just asked to kill it to do it.
And it wasn't anywhere near where the receiver was.
Yeah. No, it's sad to watch. And the other thing sad for Carolina fans is McCaffrey is now out the rest of the season with an ankle. So wait, he came back after an injury and then tweaked the ankle yesterday?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And they were a little bit concerned on the broadcast yesterday, and unfortunately for Carolina fans, they're going to be without their dynamic player for the rest of the season. Hopefully he can take this time in all offseason to figure out a better way to go about his business that's keeping him on the field going forward, because they can't have him playing just a handful of games in a season. That's just not going to work for a guy that you're having to pay that sort of money to, and that you're also building your entire offense around too, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, right. You have to change everything when that's your
right
guy. Yeah. Also, in case you haven't noticed it, the Dolphins can't lose. They just can't lose. They're going to win every week.
They're a fun team to watch.
They are. Coming up, let's go where we at in society. Trey's got some dictionary.com new stuff that's been put in there. Apparently, it's new dating phrases, including woke fishing.
I'm going to have you guess on all 10 of these.
Excellent. I'll guess on what this is. New dictionary terms, because since it's been 99 since I dated anybody, this will be perfect. Me trying to figure out what the new dating phrases are. Stay with us on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Why me, Lord? What have I ever done to deserve the even one of the pleasures I've known? And tell me, Lord, what did I ever do that was worth loving you for the kindness you show? Lord, help me, Jesus, I've wasted it so. Help me, Jesus, I know what I am.
That's a great old song. What is this, Trey?
New Willie, Why Me?
Okay. Doesn't sound like Willie. I guess that's Willie in the background there. The main voice doesn't sound like
Willie.
Yeah,
no, you're right. But I'm only seeing Willie amongst the. That's definitely not Willie.
Yeah.
I'm only seeing Willie as the credited artist. So
okay.
I'm not sure what to tell you there.
Hey, new Willie Nelson, Why Me, Lord? A great song from back.
Oh, it says the Willie Nelson family.
There it is.
That might be Lucas.
There you go. Good song, though. Good old
Django,
song.
Django Nelson?
Could be. Could be the whole family. Could be everybody on the new stuff.
Jackson Nelson with an X?
New music from Friday for you on the show today. We hope you are having a great Monday and had a good Thanksgiving. Hopefully everything is digesting well. We'll try to digest more of this coaching stuff going on. Lincoln Riley to USC. Florida's found their guy. We'll try to go through some of those dominoes coming up. Right now, it's where we at in society. Here we go.
Where are we at in society today?
Oh, man, Chad, there are some times that I come across stories on weekends or long weekends that I have to email myself just to make sure we get to them in this segment. And that happened, I think it was on Friday, where I saw the headline, 10 new dating slang words to know for 2021. And I said, well, Chad and I are clearly in the dark on this as guys
obviously
who are married and don't date. So I'm going to throw some of these terms out to Chad to see if he has any good guesses on them.
Dude, I met my wife in early 99. Just think of that. Like, since when Y2K happened, we were already dating, already together. So, yeah, I have no clue. I did not date in any kind of technological world, phone, pictures, video, none of it.
And so we have to thank dictionary.com for this list of 10 words. And we're going to start with soft launching.
Okay. Soft launching. Dictionary.com. Soft. This is all about dating, right?
Yes.
It's a soft launch. Okay. So that is you're trying out a relationship, but you're not telling your friends you're dating yet. Soft launch.
Well, you're pretty close there.
Yeah.
The trend of posting subtle hints on social media that you're dating someone new, with two glasses of wine, for instance, without revealing identifying details.
I also call that Facebook phishing sometimes. You know, when you put something on Facebook and you're trying to get the reaction?
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what that is. All right, so I get credit for that one. I got that one, right?
We'll give you credit for
all
that
right
one. One
very
for
nice
one.
Soft launching. All right.
Number two.
Yeah.
Roaching.
Ooh.
Roaching.
Okay, roaching. Roaching, I'm going to say that's a reference to a roach, and the old saying is about how roaches never go away and they survive everything. Roaching is you keep hanging around even though they've dumped you multiple times.
Like the guess, you're going to be incorrect on this one, though.
Darn it.
Roaching is when a person you're dating is hiding the fact that they're involved with multiple other people at the same time.
Oh, my God.
So the first time Justine and I dated, after I moved to Chicago,
yes,
I was kind of roaching.
You were kind of roaching?
Yeah, but we never had that conversation about exclusivity.
So you're being secretly gross is what roaching means.
Not secretly gross. You're playing the field and you're not necessarily this makes it sound like you're hiding something. You're just not being blatant about what's going on in the rest of your life.
You're being Lincoln Riley. They didn't ask you directly about USC. Is that what you're saying?
Lincoln Riley did just roach Oklahoma.
He just roached Oklahoma. Okay.
Okay, number three. This is very, very era specific. Fauci-ing.
Ooh.
Fauci-ing.
Okay. Fauci-ing.
Like Anthony Fauci.
But make it a verb. So when you are Fauci-ing, you... you're absolutely certain about something 1 week, but then you change the next week.
Oh, yeah, you try to convince that person to date you because you are the science. No, Fauciing. Boy, I am so glad that I'm not in the dating world right now for this in particular.
All right.
Fauciing is the act of turning down a date because someone isn't taking the pandemic seriously enough.
Oh, I should have guessed that one. Okay. All right. Should have guessed that one.
Or maybe they're taking it too seriously.
Yep, yep.
Number four, zombieing.
Zombieing. All right, I'm going to go back to my guess. Zombieing would mean you're never dead. You keep coming back. So that's the person that you keep like going back to social media, even though you've been told multiple times they're not interested.
Technically wrong on this one too.
Damn it.
Zombieing is when a ghoster, which is when somebody is hanging out with you and then all of a sudden they disappear and you have no trace of them. They never let you know what was about to happen.
Right.
When a ghoster rises from the dead and contacts you like nothing ever happened.
Oh, and then they're just like, hey, I'm going to a baseball game. You want to go?
Like, hey, what's going on?
What's up?
I haven't been touching a while. I don't know. You tell me. All right. Number five. This is the one that I previewed in the start of the hour. Woke fishing. Any idea on woke fishing?
Okay, woke fishing. Okay, that would be when you put a message out on social media that you consider woke, but you're not as woke as the message. You're trying to get people to react, and then you make fun of them for reacting.
Well, the make fun of them part, I think you may have gotten it wrong there, but you were right up to that point. Woke fishing is when someone portrays themselves as more progressive than they are,
right?
Usually on social media, in order to impress others.
Oh, in order to impress. Okay, that's different.
Or simply because they aren't as well-versed on the issues that they believe themselves to be. That's also called virtue signaling, too. But woke fishing, term for virtue signaling.
Okay.
Benching.
Benching. This sounds like a sports term. So benching just means, I don't know, you just put someone off to the side and you're dating other people.
Ding, ding.
That's
it. Put them on hold just in case some other relationships don't work out.
Okay, yeah.
Orbiting.
Orbiting is a nice way to say you're Facebook stalking someone. No.
It's when someone breaks off all contact with a person they were dating in real life, but they continue following. Oh, you are kind of right here. Continue following that person on social media and interacting with their posts and content.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, you're right
there. I get that one. Okay.
You get that one. Cuffing.
Oh, dear
this
Lord.
Can go in so many different directions.
It really can. Cuffing. Yeah, I'm not even going to put a guess on this one. I'm just going to consider myself wrong.
Okay, cuffing is another way of saying people are committing to a relationship. Huh? And cuffing season is the period during the fall and winter holidays from Thanksgiving to Valentine's Day when people are more inclined to pair up in committed romantic relationships.
Oh,
they had a
okay.
different term for this in Chicago. They called it winter cuddle buddies. Where you're not going to be going out nearly as much in winter because it's going to be so brutally cold and you just don't want to be outside as much. You find that person to latch on to spend a lot of time with over the next 2, 3, 4 months.
But in this case, they're also talking about the holidays that are important, right? Somebody wants to be together for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Valentine's, and then you might separate.
That's typically the period. It's handcuffing yourself to somebody else that you're going to be in this committed whatever for the next several months as the social life really slows down.
Because I used to think it was a perfect idea to date someone who had a birthday between Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day and start dating them in March or April. I thought that was the perfect timing because then you could find out if you really cared enough.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good, I like your strategy there. Yeah. All right, breadcrumbing. This one seems pretty self-explanatory.
Breadcrumbing, you're throwing little pieces of information out to get someone interested or to get some kind of reaction.
Yeah, leading someone on via text and social media.
Uh-huh.
And finally,
yes,
pocketing.
Pocketing?
Yep.
Pocketing. That's where you find someone on social media that you don't know, and then you just take note of them, and you kind of set them, not on the bench quite yet, but you start to notice them.
Again,
putting them in your pocket?
Even though you're wrong, I like the guess here. Okay. Pocketing means keeping someone you're dating separate or pocketed from the rest of your life, like not introducing them to your friends, inviting them to events, or making mention of your relationship on social media.
All right, so I got myself at 4 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
All right, come on.
I mean, you're doing better than the average meteorologist in Austin.
Old man got a 40 on the test, kids.
Hey,
there you
go. That'd get you into the Hall of Fame in baseball, Chad.
That would. You're right. That would get me into the Hall of Fame. Dude, I'd be so bad dating right now. It would be out of control.
I can't even imagine,
Do you realize what that would be like?
I can't even imagine.
If we had to date right now, oh, my God. All right, coming up, Lincoln Riley's got a new gig. He's headed west. What does that mean for Oklahoma and some other dominoes that need to fall? We'll talk coaching stuff next on the Horn.